Meditieren, Yoga, Joggen, nichts entspannt mich.
Echt? Mich entspannt meine Steuer total.
Steuer? Wie Finanzamt? Die Steuererklärung?
Ja, ich habe ganz locker über 1000 Euro zurückbekommen.
Hast du geheime Connections?
Nö, nur die Wieso-Steuer-App.
Wow, und das ist einfach?
Klar, die macht fast alles automatisch.
Plötzlich fühle ich mich so entspannt.
Hol dir dein Geld zurück. Tiefenentspannt mit Wieso-Steuer.
Stu does America.
Disaster Week. Here on Studios America. By the way, I just got word a couple of minutes ago that there's going to be some live coverage of the Donald Trump speech tonight right here on Blaze TV. And I think I'm going to be part of it. So I'm excited about that. It is, they're going to be Blaze News Tonight, which, by the way, is a brand new show right here on Blaze TV. They're going to take that. I think it's going to be live tonight, and they're going to roll that right into the coverage of the Donald Trump speech at the RNC. You'll watch the speech live on Blaze TV. Then we'll have some reaction right after it. What happened? Kind of, take our temperature on everything that went on. It's a great panel. And then after that, we'll probably go live on YouTube as well. YouTube.com/StuDoesAmerica. We're doing a lot of lives there. Been trying to make sure that we can get the coverage to you as fast as possible and analysis, kind of keep things in perspective with all the crazy going on right now. So if you go to youtube.com/StuDoesAmerica, subscribe to the channel and click the bell for notifications, you will be alerted when these live broadcasts begin. Dan Andrus is going to be here in a little bit to help recap this past week of madness. Joe Biden continues his unconstitutional crusade to forgive student debt. I mean, I feel like we could do this story every single day. But we start by doing Biden's NAACP disaster. And this is part of it, the disaster series that we're doing. All these interviews that Joe Biden is doing to prove how wonderful he is keep ending up in disaster. But let's go to another part of this whole escapade here for a moment, and go to instead his BET interview that he did, I believe it was yesterday. And he had a new breaking news announcement on whether he was going to drop out or not. He's been saying over and over again, basically, nobody can tell him to do it. It's only me. I depend on me to make that decision. He had a little bit of a tweak on this during the BET interview. Watch.
Is there anything that you would look to, you personally, not anybody else, not other pundits, not even perhaps family members, that you would look to say, if I see that, I will reevaluate?
If there had some medical condition that emerged, if the doctors came to me and said, you got this problem, that problem. But I made a serious mistake in the whole debate. And look, when I originally ran, you may remember it, I said I was going to be a transitional candidate. Mm-hmm. And I thought that I'd be able to move from this, just pass it on to someone else. But I didn't anticipate things getting so, so, so divided. And quite frankly, I think the only thing age brings is a little bit of wisdom.
And
I think I've demonstrated that I know how to get things done.
Usually also brings disease, dementia. Eventually, you slow down quite a bit. That's kind of what we're seeing right now. That's an amazing answer, though, because he's like, oh, well, it could be a health issue. Could just be a health issue. He was very, though, surprised by how divided things are. That's why he had to run again for a second term, which is interesting because his entire BS story about his origin was that the country was so divided because of Charlottesville, he had to jump in. So he said he's going to be a transitional candidate, but things got even more divided than Charlottesville. I don't even understand what he's saying anymore. And, you know, the good thing, as Donald Trump also pointed out in the debate, neither does he. Just hours after this new, I could get a hit with a medical issue, we got this. President Joe Biden has tested positive for COVID-19. I wish I could show you all of the videos of him walking around a Mexican restaurant, getting in the faces of everybody as he has COVID and just breathing on them. That's a wonderful thing. It was fascinating to watch this administration that was so serious about COVID and so worried about it. He had some sickness symptoms earlier in the day, decided to do his events anyway, and then later on, because they didn't get better, they finally tested him for COVID and found out that he had it. So that's great. CNN's coverage was interesting as well, because how do you find out about the president of the United States having COVID-19? Usually an official announcement of some sort, right? Well, this is the CNN reporting. President Joe Biden has tested positive for COVID-19, according to the president and CEO of Unidos US, Janet Marguia. kind of weird. Who is she? She's the former head of La Raza, which is a extreme left-wing open borders group. And La Raza stands for, or is translated as, the race, which somehow isn't racist to name your organization the race. Anyway, she, I guess, moved to another organization and is now making official announcements for the White House. She was going to, he was going to appear at that place and they canceled it. That's why he made the announcement. By the way, CNN then changed the beginning of this story. President Biden tested positive for COVID-19 on Wednesday, disrupting a key campaign event meant to shore up support with Latino voters at a critical juncture in the election. I don't know what that means, but it is kind of strange that they changed that. I don't know why they would do such a thing. All of this has not added up to wonderful things in the polls for Joe Biden. Trump leads Biden nationally and in seven swing states, says a new poll. This is, I think, from Emerson. Yeah, Emerson College poll. 46% of registered voters say they support Trump. 42% support Biden. 12% say they are undecided. Once again, I would point out, it's not that bad. I know this is weird to say, but like it, with all the stuff going on, he should be down by like 15 points. The fact that he's 4 points behind, I think is an argument for him to stay in the race, not to drop out of it. All this stuff going on, he's still only 4 points behind. It's incredible. Now, of course, I want him to stay in the race, so I may have a bias there. But I will say these aren't disastrous polls. He's behind in all these swing states. Some of them are pretty disastrous, being down by 7 points in Arizona, for example. If that holds, it's going to be really bad. But, you know, that's about where he's been for a while. What has changed? This has been basically the same. Now, none of this polling isn't fully, we haven't really had a full dose of real polling that has happened after the assassination attempt. You would expect this to move the polls a little bit, a bump, a sympathy bump, essentially, for Donald Trump. And, you know, Donald Trump, not always the recipient of sympathy from America, but in this case, I think he will get some of that. To give you some perspective historically, though, it's really, really hard to see how this ties in exactly. But Ronald Reagan, when he was assassinated or attempted to be assassinated back in 1981, he had just gotten into office and he went from a 60% approval rating to a 68% approval rating. Now, that bump disappeared within 3 months. So now apply this to Donald Trump. What does it mean? Well, an 8-point bump. Well, we're in a much more polarized society than we were in 1981. So I don't expect the bump to be as big as 8 points, frankly. Secondarily, we're also in a much, much different media environment where, honestly, like, these news cycles, we've had four of them since the shooting, which happened on Saturday, right? Like, I don't expect the bump to last 3 months at all. I think if it gets 2 weeks out of the bump, honestly, I will be surprised at this point in this media environment. And finally, like, Donald Trump, people have their mind made up on Donald Trump. Ronald Reagan had only been in office for a few, weeks or months at that point when all that went down. So I don't know that you can use that. That would be a high water mark, I would say, for Donald Trump to get 8 points for 3 months. I think it's going to be much, much smaller than that. We will see here over the next week or two. A new moment for Biden, one advisor says he's being receptive. And this is a part of the storyline that we talked about and told you about literally right after the debate. They are going to try to convince him to leave. Then they're going to start to threaten him. And then they're going to start. Step three is leaking stories about him, moving their narrative forward through leaks, even if Joe Biden doesn't agree. So if Joe Biden isn't agreeing to drop out, leak that he is. The White House, the CNNs, the MSNBCs, the New York Times, the Washington Post will all report it as fact. And then later on, which happens in this article, by the way, the White House spokesperson comes out and says he has no change in plans and he's not changing. Now, he may very well step down. If he does not step down, he will have resisted more pressure than any politician, I think, ever. To step down. It would be legitimately incredible if he can hold out through this. We're going to have dozens and dozens and dozens of representatives publicly calling for him to step down in the coming days. I mentioned this yesterday. I expect one more run at this, and we saw it begin yesterday. The leaking is happening now. The behind-the-scenes stuff. We talked to him, and we told him what we were going to do. Well, why? If it was, they had this series of interventions, and now, when he's not reacting to those interventions, they're leaking to the media that they did talk to him. So now it's really kind of more of a public disclosure. Is he actually being receptive to this? I honestly don't know. It's possible. This is a lot of pressure to resist. I mean, the only guy I can talk to that I can remember really not falling to pressure like this was Rod Blagojevich. Now, that's a state-level thing, but Blagojevich just hung on all the way to the end. All the way to the end. He had a 4% approval rating in the state of Illinois. And he was just like, I'm staying. Very, very rare that that happens. Let me give you some of the examples of the leaks that have come out over the past 24 hours. Pelosi privately told Biden, polls show he cannot win and will take down the House. Biden responded with defensiveness. Again, it's important to understand Biden's response to this was, screw you, basically. He's not really moved off of that, at least publicly. Jeffries and Schumer also privately warned Biden that he could imperil Democrats. Again, these are not public statements from these officials. They are leaks to the media saying they said these things privately. They tried to have an intervention, hoped to convince him. He didn't do it. So now they're leaking that actually we did talk to him. Schiff has also come out. This one was public. Adam Schiff. Again, does anyone care what Adam Schiff says about anything? Not really. But they are portraying him as a close ally to Pelosi, and that's why he's significant. So in the middle of all of this, Joe Biden goes to the NAACP. Now, one of the reasons why he's still in the race right now is because he's received real backing from black voters and black members of Congress who have said, hey, don't roll over our guy. We like our guy. And, you know, it's tough to roll over when it's tough to roll over black voters and black politicians when you are a party completely built on identity politics. Right. You can't roll over Kamala Harris and give it to Gavin Newsom because you can't be seen as violating intersectional lines. It's just not OK. So what are they going to do with all of this? Well, the Biden pitches to NAACP his second term. Now, you think, OK, he's coming out of here. He knows he needs to make these performances all really good. So this is really as good as you can get from Joe Biden. And I want to give you a couple of highlights. This one is probably the worst of the worst. I will tell you right off up front. This one is scary because he's talking about a policy that he supposedly designed and is bringing to the people as a key part of his reelection campaign. And this is how he presents it. Watch.
The idea that corporate owned housing is able to raise your rent $300-$400 a month or something under what I'm about to announce, they can't raise it more than $55.
Now, he looks around like, what the hell is going on? You could see him leaning in. Usually he does that for effect. I don't think that was going on there because his policy is not that you can only raise rent $55. First of all, just to state the obvious, this would be rent control. It would be challenged throughout the courts. You probably could not do it. And also, rent control has been proven a massive failure everywhere it's been tried forever. So it would be a terrible, 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 terrible policy to say you can only raise rent $55. It would be awful, and it would almost definitely not get through. But that is not his policy. His policy is you can't raise rents by 5%. And he was looking at a teleprompter and couldn't read what he was actually seeing. He saw 5% and read it as 55 and assumed it meant $55. Now, if he was reading a number from history, this percentage of people in 1942 supported this, you might understand that he could misread it. I don't know. Sometimes it's hard to read a prompter. Maybe he's far away from it. His eyesight's not that great anymore. You misread something, it's not the worst thing in the world. What is the worst thing in the world is when we're talking about your central economic policy of how you're going to address a housing issue. This is a highly promoted idea from the White House that he is not going to raise rent by 5% or more. This is something he knows. He's talked about it before. He's talking about announcing it right here. It's the central part of this speech. And he doesn't know enough about his own policy to know that $55 was wrong. And it's one thing, maybe even you read $55 and then catch yourself and realize that you're wrong. Maybe you can make a calculation. What's 55%? $55. I can figure it out real quick. And I could say that's about if you make about a little over $1,000 or whatever. No, he can't even do that. In fact, he doesn't know he's made the mistake. He's looking around the room confused because he doesn't even know what's going on. It's shocking. And the reason why I brought this up as part of Disaster Week was largely because of that particular moment. But there are so many other moments in this speech. And again, this speech got lost as another moment that was just kind of into the background as all these other stories are going on. You need to know what he's actually doing in these speeches. Let me give you another one. Here is Joe Biden once again losing his train of thought.
I know you say, Joe, you may not have a Congress.
What?
Well, guess what? You all told me I couldn't pass the Inflation Reduction Act.
Did that
you
audience
all told
tell
me
you
I couldn't
that?
Face it. Anyway, we did it.
They like laugh at him sad. Oh.
We're going to bring rents down, as I said. We're going to build 2 million affordable homes. And cap rent increases to 5% a year, so corporate landlords
can't. He's already been talking about the 5%. He still screwed it up.
Anyway, I don't want to get going.
Another anyway.
I'm going to get very upset. But they're just gouging America. And by the way, not only saves lives, it'll save taxpayers just what I did on the first round on dealing with Medicare. It saves the taxpayer $160 billion. Because they don't have to pay these exorbitant prices to these, anyway.
I mean, that's him just losing his train of thought over and over again. He often uses that anyway as a way to bridge to either, anyway, I shouldn't say anymore. This is a serious government secret, and I almost told you about it, but I really shouldn't say anymore. Or he acts like he was getting so angry. Anyway, I'm going to get all worked up. I can't say. This is him just losing his train of thought, and he does it over and over and over and over again. Also, he talked, this was a fascinating clip of the speech, I thought, because DEI is so thoroughly been demoted, I think, from our society. It was this popular thing a few years ago. People now realize what it is. It's basically judging people on the basis of skin color, right? Like the type of thing that you don't necessarily want to do as a society, as a civilization generally. But here's Joe Biden still locked in on the DEI train. Listen.
They've already eviscerated affirmative action. They'll also decimate diversity, equity, and inclusion all across American life. They're already trying to do it by banning books. They're trying to erase black history. Black history is American history.
Now, of course, he's totally lying about the point there, but you do get the worry that that he thinks that DEI is still a good idea. Like, he still thinks that's a selling point. It's like when they were trying to sell Bidenomics for 2 weeks. Remember that? When they were like, actually, Bidenomics is a good term. And that didn't last very long. He went on talking about the shooting a little bit. Again, not really in a tone where you'd think, wow, God, my opponent was shot. What do I do here? Am I responsible for any of this? No introspection whatsoever. He's going back to the typical gun control arguments.
An AR-15 was used in the shooting Donald Trump. Just as it was an assault weapon that killed so many others, including children. It's time to outlaw them.
Now, again, a lot of slurring in there, obviously, but the AR-15 was used. I don't even know if we know that. They've said it's an AR-15 style rifle. There's not really a lot of specifics on that yet. I will say it wasn't most of these bans would mean that you can't buy a gun. This gun had already been purchased, and it had been purchased legally by his father, who gave him the gun, thinking he was responsible with it. I mean, I can't even imagine how he's feeling today. But at the end of the day, like, you can, unless you're basically claiming you're going to go door to door and collect these things, because that is a recipe for something you don't want, that I will say. Here is, Biden talking about the issue of gun violence in his NAACP speech.
We're going to speak about violence. We're going to speak about guns. More children in America die of a gunshot wound than any other reason. That's stunning, and that is sick.
This is a weird stat. And I look, it's a stat that you can understand a politician using because it sounds so powerful. But in reality, the reason why it's true is because kids don't usually die of things. That's all that is. That's all it's saying. Very few children die of, let's say, cancer. Cancer, by the way, is still one of the top killers of children, leukemia. But like, they don't often die of heart disease, right? Like, they don't have a lifetime of eating at Arby's to build up the heart disease that kills most people later on in life. So people die when they're young, usually due to accidents and crimes. That's just the truth of the matter. And yeah, guns are, I mean, it's accidents that are really the leading cause of death for children. That includes crimes I mean, the way they categorize it, I think it's accidents, and there's another term they use, accidents, and it's not homicides, it's another term, I'm losing it off the top of my head. But bottom line is, that's why people die when they're 5 and 6. They don't die from diseases, they don't die of Alzheimer's. That's not a specific thing that could happen to anyone we've been talking about, but just to let you know, they die of terrible things like car accidents and gunshots and things of that nature. Falling off of things, drowning, that's what kills kids because they don't die of diseases that kill much, much, much more, far more people than those incidents at the bottom. And of course, like, you know, there's been a decrease of this over the past 20 or 30 years, not an increase. So anyway, here, the bottom line here to go through all of this is, I don't say any of this because I think Joe Biden should drop out of the race. I don't. I think Joe Biden should stay in the race. Part of this is because I don't want Joe Biden to be president anymore, and he provides the best opportunity for someone to beat this administration, Harris, Biden, Newsom, Whitmer, whoever else comes in. That's part of it. I am blatantly biased in this way, but I will say it's his freaking nomination. And you tell me that he should be listening to Chuck Schumer? Adam Schiff comes and tells you something, and you're going to listen to him? Nancy Pelosi? Absolutely not. I want Joe Biden to stand up on the desk like the Wolf of Wall Street speech, and I want him to say, I'm staying. I'm staying. The show goes on. I'm staying in this race because I won this nomination, and you're not going to throw me out. I'm the president of the United States of America. You can't tell me to leave. Screw you. That's what I would say if I were him. And I mean that sincerely. I do want him to make that decision as well. But like, why the hell would you listen to Nancy Pelosi? She said, I'm going to do everything in my power to get him to drop out. You know what your power is? Everything in your power is nothing in this situation. Teach her that. That's what I would do if I were Joe Biden, which undoubtedly means he's going to be dropped out by the time you actually listen to this monologue. Back in a second. America. We'll have more on the shooting here with Dan Andros here in just a couple of minutes. Let me tell you about summertime. You know, summer just got a heck of a lot more awesome thanks to Bespoke Post and their all new premium lineups of Box of Awesome collections. These are awesome. They're so cool. And if it wasn't already, cool enough, they have great gear in each box with Box of Awesome Premium. They're doubling the fresh finds. And I will say, they're always like, oh, well, it's at least $70 of stuff in each box. I always find it's much, much more than that. You know, usually there's one or two things in there that are $70 by themselves. These are really cool items, things you haven't necessarily thought of. And I will say, what a great gift. If you have a dad or a grandpa or a brother in your life, a significant other, and you want to get them something cool, you're not sure what to get them, get them a Box of Awesome. They're going to love it. You just go take a quiz at boxofawesome.com, and your answers will help them pick the right Box of Awesome for you. It's free to join. They release new items across all sorts of categories every single month. You can choose from a standard or a premium box. And when you become a member, you'll have access to stellar discounts across a plethora of products. They're talking 30% off or more sometimes. With Father's Day coming up, what a great time for Father's Day. Bespoke Post is a place to go. They got tons of quality gear. Any dad is going to appreciate it. Get 15% off your first box when you sign up at boxofawesome.com and enter the code STU at checkout. It's boxofawesome.com. The code is STU. Get 15% off your first box now. Boxofawesome.com. The code is STU.
Unsere Empfehlung für deinen Podcast? Frisches Obst und knackiges Gemüse von Aldi. Immer gut, immer günstig, immer vielfältig. Kurz gesagt, frische für alle. Zum Aldi-Preis. Diese Woche Zespri Sangold Kiwi. Das Stück für nur 55 Cent. Oder dunkle Tafeltrauben. 500 Gramm für nur 1,79 Euro. Entdecke jetzt viele weitere Angebote in deiner Aldi-Nord-Filiale. Und weiter geht's. Einfach lauschen und genießen. Aldi. Gutes für alle.
I'm joined now by Dan Andros. He's the managing editor over at CBN News and host of CBN's Quick Start podcast, which you can now subscribe to, and I would encourage you to do so. It's wherever you get your podcast. Dan, thanks so much for coming on the program.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Dan, we haven't spoken, at least on the air, about what your reaction is to the shooting of Trump. And it's so weird because here we are on what, Thursday is it now? I'm losing track of time. This is mm-hmm. less than a week ago. It feels like it was 6 months ago already. First of all, where were you when you found out about this?
Yeah, I was just here at home. And actually, I think I got a text from you. Because I was just doing family stuff, and I think your text was just, "Hey, I think Trump just got shot." I'm like, "Oh my goodness, no way!" And then, you know, then I dove in from there. But yeah,
it's incredible because I think I was talking to a caller today on the radio show, and they said, you know, I was talking to a bunch of my friends, and the people on the left, the terrible ones, are saying they wish he did get shot. Of course, you get that aspect. You get the people in the middle who are like stunned by this and like can't believe this would ever happen. And he said what was interesting is the people on the right were kind of like, gosh, I'm glad he's okay, but not surprised at all. And I think that's pretty normal because they've seen the buildup to this over all of these years. So many people on the conservative side of the argument were expecting something crazy like this to happen. And unfortunately, it finally did.
Yeah. And I will say that given the way Trump is characterized in the press generally, and by all of his critics, I fully expected an attempt at some point. But I honestly, my miscalculation was I figured it wouldn't be until he hypothetically won this election coming up, and then you would get the violence breaking out. I did not see this. I didn't see it coming ahead of time.
Yeah, it was really just awful to watch. And then, of course, we had to deal with the media reaction to it afterward, which was just so hard to take. You know, it was easy. You know, we highlighted yesterday the Lester Holt interview with Joe Biden, where his basic answer to the reason why all of this happened is because the guy who's the victim of the shooting said a lot of bad things over the past few years. That he kept highlighting, which is just incomprehensible. I mean, when do we blame the victim of the shooting for the shooting? But that is where the left has gone. And they've been very clear to make sure we all understand now's the time that we need to tamp down the rhetoric.
Yeah, this one is particularly tough to take because as people are noting online, and this is one of those times where, you know, the internet lives forever, all these things that you did and said, like, it just come right back. I mean, everyone's posting Joe Biden's speech in which he essentially condemned half or more than half of Americans as radical MAGA and all this. And, you know, you look at like the victim from this rally, the gentleman, the former firefighter who passed away tragically. You know, you look at the response this guy's getting. Everyone's like, man, Corey was just the best. He was a man of faith. He'd give you the shirt off his back. You know, salt of the earth type of guy, loved his country, loved his family, you know, loved God. And you're like, wait a minute. I've just been told by this administration for the past 4 years that these are the worst people in the world and they're horrible and they're scary. And it's very frustrating to watch the president particularly try to go, yeah, let's cool it a little bit because these are the people who set the standard. I'm not one, Stu, and I'm pretty sure you're not either, who blame the actions of a crazy person on rhetoric, right? But the left has done this. They literally have Trump in court right now trying to blame him for anything that happened on January 6th because he said fight like hell. Okay, you, if you're on the left, you've made this bed. Now you've got to sleep in it. So if anything, Joe Biden should be out there saying if he's using his own standard about rhetoric and spurring people to action, calling Trump a threat to democracy over and over and over again. Joe Scarborough on the air saying that Trump will execute his political opponents if he's able to get into office again. Essentially calling him Hitler and saying that he's a fascist and that he's going to tear up the Constitution. If you think rhetoric is responsible for these actions, then you have to blame yourself for these actions or for these words.
Because
they've been doing it over and over again. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, the Hitler thing is the easiest example where they compared him to Hitler, said he was going to take your rights away. He was a dictator. He was going to put in all these policies. He was a fascist. And, like, who's the hero of the Hitler story? I mean, Tom Cruise gets Valkyrie made about the guy who tried to kill Hitler, right? Like, they make Tom Cruise movies about you. Look at, Handmaid's Tale is the other one they always use, right? This is a theology, it's going to turn into this theocracy where they're going to be taking women's rights away. They're going to be beaten and raped. And they say over and over and over again, it's Handmaid's Tale, it's Handmaid's Tale. Well, the heroes of the Handmaid's Tale story are the people trying to kill the leaders of the country who's doing that. They have done this over and over again. I completely agree. There's no certainly legal responsibility for what has gone on when it comes to a shooting by someone. Whoever pulls the trigger is the person who's responsible for that. That is something that is a very important American principle. Rhetoric is, you can say these things. You can say these things. You can compare your opponents to the worst people who have ever lived. But the question is it a good idea? And certainly, I'm not going to get preached to by the people who've been doing it all of this time.
Yeah, no, absolutely not. And it's very hard to take. And, I mean, remember the speech, the Philadelphia speech? I mean, with the red dramatic, the red dramatic background, and boy, that was just so odd and bizarre. But yeah, it's very, very tough to take these people now that are saying, "Oh, yeah, better calm it down. You'd hate for some violence to break out here." Like, I don't know if you noticed, but someone just got shot in the head.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of already happened, and if you're truly, honestly going to diagnose this, you got to look in the mirror first.
Maybe the most egregious one was CNN in the moment, right, that night, saying, Donald Trump, after the shooting, stands up and says, fight, fight, fight. That's not the sort of rhetoric we need right now. The man was just shot, and you're criticizing him. It's amazing. And I will say, like, with the incompetent reaction from the Secret Service and seemingly all law enforcement involved in this situation, adding it on with all the questions about who the shooter is, there doesn't seem to be much of a record of who this guy is. In a way, I can understand people trying to fill in the gaps with whatever conspiracy theory comes into their mind. And I can't, it's hard to criticize, but it has been amazing to watch on the left where they're like, well, maybe the shooting didn't happen. Maybe it was staged. Maybe that's not a real bandage. Maybe it was glass and not an actual bullet. I mean, it is utterly hilarious to watch these people who have preached to us about conspiracy theories all these years as they react to this.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just waiting for the $1 billion lawsuit to happen at any moment now. I mean, if we all remember Alex Jones, who and kind of entertained these conspiracy theories about Sandy Hook and saying that was staged, and well, then they came out with this judgment of $1 billion, which was just ridiculously absurd. But my goodness, if you're sitting here saying we have a deceased individual here, are you saying the same thing? Are you saying that these were all crisis actors and everything? Is Trump a crisis actor? Like, I don't know. I don't know how you can possibly. It's got to be very hard on the left to walk consistently in this stuff, because you're constantly having to move the goalposts over and going, well, I don't know what to do now, because this makes us look pretty bad that Trump got shot. I don't know, conspiracy. Like, didn't we condemn the conspiracy? It doesn't matter. Just go. We'll deal with that later.
Right.
But that's part of having the entire media in your back pocket, because they just hope that nobody will call them out on it. Or when they do, they'll just call that a conspiracy. That'll be a selectively edited video. No big deal there. So it's frustrating to watch.
It really is. And it leads me to this, where we're talking about tonight a big speech from Donald Trump, his first speech since all of this went down. Again, it feels like it was a month ago already. It's crazy. 12 different news cycles have happened since this shooting.
I know. Remember when Trump got convicted of something? Like, what was that? Was that in this life or the last life? I don't even know.
Totally meaningless to the campaign.
It's totally, completely meaningless.
And I keep warning my conservative friends about this. Like, I know it feels like Trump is completely invincible right now in this election, but like, we got 3.5 months left. God only knows what's going to actually happen in those 3.5 months. But let's go to tonight for a second. He's got this big speech. He's coming out. There have been all these reports about him changing the speech, rewriting the speech, going for a different tone. And, I don't know, like, I think every time we've heard that Donald Trump is this, going to try a different tone, he's been changed by something. Most of the time, it hasn't played out. He's been the same guy we've known for, you know, his entire public life, which spans half a century. But this is a different situation. The man was almost murdered on stage just a couple of days ago. Yeah. Does this change Donald Trump?
I mean, he's saying it does. He did say it last night in a talk that he was giving. He just said, you know, I mean, it clearly impacted him. He's getting that close to death, really. I mean, it doesn't matter how big of a personality you are. I would imagine that changes even the highest of profile of people to come that close to death. But here's what I'll say about him changing his speech. And I think, and I thought this once he got into office the first time in 2016, you know, he had all the nicknames, he had all the, you know, the zingers in the primary. I thought once he got, you know, and then even in the head-to-head matchup, I thought once he got in office, if he just toned that stuff down, he would have actually gained a lot of supporters outside of his sort of MAGA base. But he kind of kept feeding the red meat, and that just caused the press to react crazily. And then it just kept going and going and going. I think if he does it this time, meaning if he does strike a unifying tone, given everything that's happened, I think it would work. He doesn't have to do anything right now to gain support from conservatives. He just doesn't have to. Mm-hmm. I mean, those people are with him no matter what, especially whoever would classify themselves as MAGA. They're not going anywhere. So you don't have to constantly pander to them now. He doesn't. I mean, he really didn't have to do it before. But if he does this unifying tone, I really think, Stu, and I'm interested to get your take on this too, I think it would work. And I think he would win in a landslide. The big question is, will he be able to resist going back into, you know, fake news and name calling mode in the kind of, you know, back and forth that he's become famous for?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, look, it's going to be hard for him to stay away from that completely. But what I think the tone switch is his realization, not, you know, and there may be more to it, like internally, that I can't cover from the outside. But I think from the perspective of politics, I think he's seeing now an opportunity not at a 51-49 win, but instead at a real landslide, a win where he's not, like, you know, threading the needle and winning these states by a few percent, where he could actually make a, I don't even know if a Reagan-type landslide is possible, but I think he's seeing the possibility of maybe a Obama over McCain type of landslide, where, like, you'd have a real separation, a real mandate. And I think that's possible if he nails this. And Trump has had periods where he's gone through, I would say, the last few weeks of the 2016 campaign, he was super disciplined. If he decides he wants to do that and he thinks it's the right approach, I think you're right. I think it could work really, really well for him.
And remember, before he got into politics, all these celebrities, everybody loved him. He is a nice guy. He's an affable guy. Everyone that meets him says he's pleasant to be around. I mean, even talking about Joe Biden and the call with Biden. So if he can tap into that Trump at this particular time, if he would have done this after in the first term of his presidency, I think he would have had, because he would have, everyone knows that he's a successful businessman. They would have just, I think, said, okay, the economy's doing great and he seems to be holding things down. Like, I'm not going to, you know, I think he would have rallied a lot of people. Not, again, outside of conservative circles. I'm always focused on sort of those fence sitters that can kind of go either way. Maybe they don't really care about politics, but they need some reason to get in. Those people are so influenced by mainstream media, and we know where mainstream media leans. So hence, they always typically end up falling for the left, or they just don't vote. So I think he has a real, real chance to win those right now.
Dan Andros, managing editor at CBN News. Be sure to check him out on the Quick Start podcast. It is available wherever you get your podcasts. Head over there and subscribe today. Dan, thanks so much for coming on the program.
All right. Thanks, Steve.
According to the University of Utah's Drug Information Service, total active drug shortages hit an all-time high of 323 this year in the first quarter. There were 48 new shortages recorded just through March. this is not America. I don't know what this is right now. It doesn't make any sense to me, but there is something you could do to ensure that your family, at least, and your loved ones, at least, have medication on hand when it is needed. It is a solution that thousands of people have already discovered. It's called the Jace case, and it allows you to stock a medication that you need for a long time into the future. The Jace case is a personalized emergency kit that contains essential antibiotics, medications that treat the most common and deadly bacterial infections, and it provides 5 life-saving antibiotics for emergency use. So you just fill out a simple form online, and they'll hook you up with everything that you need. You can add on these different things like EpiPens, ivermectin, really whatever you want. Jace Medical encourages you to take your family's health into your own hands. And I do too, because frankly, you can't trust the system, really. You know, we all kind of did that, and then we saw COVID happen, and all the supply chains dried up. We couldn't get freaking toilet paper, right? Like, don't let this happen to you. Jace.com, Jace.com. Enter the code STU at checkout for discount on your order. The promo code is STU at Jace.com, Jase.com. It's the Jace case from Jace Medical. Well, Joe Biden, even though he's got COVID and about to potentially drop out of the nomination, he's still trying to scam the Constitution. He has now canceled another $1.2 billion in student debt. Again, he's been told many, many times he can't really do this. We will. Each one of these is getting challenged in the courts and will rise up and eventually probably be shot down. But God only knows. He's just trying it a bunch of different ways, a bunch of different numbers to try to make it work. It's disgusting. It's revolting. He is a terrible president. He was a terrible president before the debate. He remains to be a terrible president. But that terrible president should absolutely keep the nomination. It's his. He deserves it. Stay in there, Joe. You stay in there. Wolf of Wall Street. You can do it. By the way, you want some inspiration? Bob Menendez. Bob Menendez refutes reports he's resigning following guilty verdict in bribery trial. Once again, they're leaking against him. Oh, he's going to resign now. He's told us he's going to resign. He keeps saying he's not going to resign. Doesn't matter if he's been convicted. He's not going to resign. This is what my advice to Joe Biden. Go full Menendez. I would go full Menendez. You're staying. Go full Blagojevich. You're staying until the last possible second when they drag you out of that building. That's what you should do, Joe. You stay there. You get Leo DiCaprio, Wolf of Wall Street, I ain't going anywhere, and you put that right in Nancy Pelosi's face. Let me talk to those of you who own a business for a moment, because this is a frustrating thing. I'm sure you're feeling it. You've got the increased regulation, the impact of inflation, interest rates, all that hitting your bottom line. There's a solution out there, and you may not have heard of it, but it's been specifically made to help you save money and, most importantly, align with an alliance of people who are like-minded business owners like you. The Freedom Chamber is now open for business. When you join the Freedom Chamber, you will receive exclusive benefits to help your business grow while being rooted in their values of faith and family and freedom. Join other American businesses across all commercial sectors, and this is the Freedom Chamber's mission, which is basically to promote values while fostering the growth, sustainability, and success of member companies. The Freedom Chamber is a dynamic and innovative organization with comprehensive support, robust resources, and exclusive networking opportunities. Join today at freedomchamber.net. If you're a business owner, you need to get involved with people who actually understand what you're going through, that can help you, you can network with, that can build your business. freedomchamber.net. It's freedomchamber.net. Well, J.D. Vance had his big speech last night. It was pretty good, I thought. I thought it was a good rollout. It was a little late. I mentioned this. I'm old, so 11 o'clock Eastern time for the start of a speech is a little maybe out of the window for a lot of people. But I thought he was good. He was one of the really what you're doing there is introducing him to America. He's not a particularly well-known figure outside of conservative media in particular. So it was important to introduce him. But of course, he's getting the pushback that you'd expect. Real hillbillies like me don't trust J.D. Vance. You shouldn't trust him either. You know what another thing that real hillbillies don't do? Write op-eds on MSNBC.com. They don't do that either. So fraudulent from the beginning and exactly what you'd expect from MSNBC. All All right, tonight, Donald Trump's big speech at the Republican National Convention, his first speech since he was shot. Can't believe I have to say that. Now, we have a new show on Blaze TV. It's called Blaze News Tonight. It is on every night, and it's something you're really going to like, I think. It airs at 8 p.m. Eastern, and we're going to take that coverage and then bring that into the speech convention coverage tonight. I'll be on part of the coverage. Make sure you tune in and check it out.